The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Foundation of Hearts Grants is brought to you by Alive, AML Holdings Limited, APNL Holdings Limited, Baja Retreat and Spa, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, the Deposit Insurance Corporation, Freeport News, Marcos Pizza, the Ministry of Aquaculture Marine Resources, Ross Electric Motors, and Scotiabank.
The aftermath of every social revolution brings about change. Cultural norms and landmarks shift as our minds and hearts expand beyond the familiar. To everything, there is a season and a time to every purpose in the land of the living. This is our time to renew, revive, and restore the hope lost to the busyness of life. This is our time to dig again and rebuild from the storms of our past on a solid footing that holds. Welcome to The Foundation.
The Foundation. Foundation.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation. On this glorious, talk to me, it is an absolutely beautiful Monday afternoon, and this is prediction because this is a recording. I told you guys that I'll do a beautiful recording for you. You know that I'm here with my family, would take a little 2 days off and doing a few things, but I wanted to kind of leave you with something fresh. There's been a great deal of things happening over the course of the past 2 weeks or so, and trying to be able to find out where we are navigating to a point socially, I wanted to identify some voices who stood in strategic positions to be able to speak truth to power and retain their conviction to be able to move in a particular direction. I told you that we're going to be doing that. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you pick up your Guardian newspaper. It is August 21st, 2023, Monday. And I'm grateful to be in your company, even though, let's just say in spirit, not necessarily in flesh. I'm so happy to be with you guys. I'm grateful. I know that these are one of the days that you'd like to kind of tune in with us and give us a call. And I'm always grateful for that. But guys, you make sure to check me out, Guardian Talk Radio, guardiantalkradio.com, guardiantalkradio.com. You can be able to pick up the information and see exactly where we are from that particular juncture. But today is going to be a tad bit different. Talk to me. A tad bit different. It is going to give you an opportunity to be able to understand sort of the enormity of what has been happening lately. And more specifically, dissecting that to get to the root. This is the foundation. And so we want to be able to push past a lot of the superficial, someone called me the other day and said the subterfuge. We don't want to be able to give any conjecture. We want to be able to get to the raw truth of the matter. And so this is that particular approach. I told you that I reached out to some great voices, and I want to be able to hear from even more as the week progresses. But today, I want to introduce you to a man I think the country holds in great esteem. I know throughout the course of the conversation, we'll be able to hear as he continues to be able to speak to us and show us the course of what he's taken and what he's done. None other than D. Howson Mutrie, 54th Speaker of the House of Assembly, being able to speak with us today. My brother, say good afternoon to the Behip Babe Him people.
Good afternoon, Howard. It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, I'm so
happy.
I
just love your show, The Foundation. The Foundation.
I appreciate you, man.
You need a foundation, a solid foundation, to build a proper nation.
Well, you know what? And this is one of the reasons I called you. You know, since I've been an observer of sorts and really been eager, I often tell people that my sports is not football, baseball. While I used to love those things, I find myself enamored and wrapped up in this concept and idea of politics. I don't know why, but I understand it in a different manner, and I'm just grateful to be here to kind of talk about those things. Today, I've been watching you for years. I've always taken on your position as you speak to us and tell us now, well, you know, as a meteorologist, and I could remember, I could tell you the weather pattern. I want to talk to you more specifically today about the proverbial weather pattern of what's happening in politics or what's happening from a socio-political standpoint in our country. I want to start it off. Last Friday, I had an opportunity to be able to speak with a great conversation, I believe, with Ellsworth Johnson. and being able to take a perspective, he spoke to the spirit of where we are and the necessity for being able to understand that we still need to push forward, though the former administration has not hit everything on the head, all the nails, that they continue to be able to push forward to do what they have to do. I wanted to talk to you today because the last time that we saw that the House prorogue, more specifically, was based upon social suggestion as a result of your stance, your position, you being able to do some stuff. Talk to me about it.
Well, you know, the House was not prorogued during the period when I was served as Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
The House was dissolved.
Did he not prorogue it first and then dissolve it?
Well,
when you had the...
When we had the open Parliament.
Open Parliament.
There was an attempt to prorogue.
Yes.
The House. But of course, there was an error made
in that proclamation. Yes, yes.
And so the Prime Minister came back and he suspended the House for a period of time. And then he decided
to dissolve.
That during the recess, we had suspended for the summer recess. And then he decided during the recess that he would dissolve the House.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, I thought that the Prime Minister believed that if he prorogued the House, that would somehow diminish the role and the authority of the Speaker. But when he discovered that that was not the case, because the prorogation came on the morning of the open Parliament, a lot of Bahamians didn't understand the purpose and the concept of the open Parliament, including the Prime Minister, in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent the Provost Marshal, the Commissioner of Police, to the House of Assembly to prorogue the Parliament, after which the Commissioner of Police requested a meeting with the Speaker. And the Commissioner indicated that he had received information that now that the House was prorogued, the open Parliament must be canceled because the Speaker has no longer has authority.
Mm-hmm.
So I simply asked him to produce that for me in the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
or in any statute law, or in the rules of procedure of the House of Assembly. And he was unable to do so. And so they returned later that day around 2 p.m. With a corrected version of the proclamation. And the House was, quote-unquote, prorogued. But actually, the House was suspended so that we would go into a summer recess.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk to you more specifically about, because for many of us, we go through the rhythm of and the tradition of being able to say what our forefathers have said about leadership, about party politics, about the procedures that associate with the House of Assembly, but not necessarily understanding. And as you indicated, it may go all the way to the pinnacle of leadership in the country. They just don't understand these particular things. So talk to us about this sort of a proroguing. What does it mean? Because for me, if we want to start at this particular juncture, for me, it's baffling. It was baffling with the formality and the tradition, the pomp and pageantry as associated with the Westminster system, to be able to see our AG, a non-elected official, take on this kind of a position to sit or stand at the House of Assembly steps in casual attire, to be able to say that the House is prorogued. And we've also seen leadership out of the office of the Prime Minister, from a press secretary standpoint, speak to that particular position. Talk to me about the tradition and formality associated with that and what we should have expected to see.
Well, usually the Constitution under our Westminster model of governance provides a mechanism, the prorogation of Parliament, so to enable the Parliament to end a session. It doesn't end the term.
Mm-hmm.
It ends a session of Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when the House is prorogued is all of the unfinished business of the House falls away. and the slate is wiped clean, so that any bills that have not been passed and received the royal assent would have to be reintroduced to the new in the new session if mm-hmm. the government mm-hmm. intends to continue with those. All of the unanswered questions will fall away, so the opposition, official opposition, would have to reintroduce those questions in the new session if they want those questions answered. But what I think the main purpose of proroguing the House usually is for the government to introduce a new and more ambitious
legislative agenda.
Mm-hmm. And they would announce that. I don't know if you and there's some other reasons why the House may be prorogued as well. If
you remember,
Boris Johnson had mm-hmm. a situation when he was dealing with Brexit, mm-hmm. and he decided he wanted to prorogue the House for a lengthy period of time, mm-hmm. because in the House of Commons, the normal procedure is that if you prorogue the House, it normally the period or the interval would normally last about a week to 10 days. Mm-hmm. Now, what has been irregular with this proroguing of the House is
60 that days.
It goes all the way to October 4th.
Yeah.
It incorporates the summer recess, mm-hmm. Which makes it irregular. Mm-hmm. Now, one can argue that perhaps the government wanted to establish a new session of Parliament and thereby introduce the new Governor General mm-hmm. with this new speech from the throne. And, of course, all of the pomp and pageantry of establishing a new session of the Parliament mm-hmm. could really be a distraction from mm-hmm. all of the challenges and issues that the government
are facing.
Mm-hmm. So they can use that as a tool politically. And I believe, based on what I'm seeing, is that it is being used as a tool.
This is a heavy conversation.
The government to really distract from the major issues that the government seem to be facing. Because when you prorogue the parliament too, it's normally a signal, like in the case of Boris Johnson, that he could have been facing votes of no confidence.
So this is a proverbial distress signal.
Yes.
Almost a bat signal.
Because even despite the fact that we are bringing a new governor general forward for the new opening of the new session, the government, in my estimation, in using this mechanism, is not going to be able to increase confidence as opposed to reducing the confidence in the government. You see, even though you can use it as a mechanism, because you fear these votes of no confidence, you have issues in Carmichael, mm-hmm. you have issues in North Abaco, mm-hmm. you know, and you have issues in other constituencies. Mm-hmm. And so you may want to distract from those issues.
I won't talk to you about this.
Issues of corruption and so on, and allegations, the kind of rocking the government. And these issues are serious issues, because those issues, one issue is rallying the female sector of society with respect to the alleged rape.
I think we pushed past the alleged.
Well, he has been charged.
She's charged.
But he's still innocent until proven guilty.
Okay.
So I have to maintain that position.
Okay.
Right? Then we have this really, really emotional and sensitive issue of immigration. Mm-hmm. Right? Which is another major, major problem that motivates and rallies people. And so those type of issues are not going to go away. We have another major problem with BPL, which is another challenge that the government seem not to be able to
every summer session, it seems as though it's unearthed. It comes back to the forefront and being able to talk about these things. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about these things. I'm here sitting with none other than the 54th Speaker of the House of Assembly, D. Howson Mutri, and it's no holds bar. We're diving deeper into these conversations. I'm extremely excited. I want to talk about this corruption and the allegations thereof, immigration more specifically. We can definitely get into BPL, but I want to know this course, this avenue that they've taken. I'm very interested in it. This is a tool. Is it a tool to bolster confidence, to regain this sort of a social position? Because if it was, there should have been simultaneously an approach to say that we're going to introduce these things. We saw none of that. We saw absolutely none of that. And I know you want to call in. Give me some time. Don't fight me. We're going to get deeper into this. Let me take a quick commercial break and be right back after this.
It's Whopper Wednesday every Wednesday at Burger King Nassau. Make your Wednesday sizzle and sink your teeth into a flame-grilled beef patty topped with tomatoes, fresh-cut lettuce, mayo, pickles, ketchup, and sliced onions, all on a toasted sesame seed bun with fries for only $5.95. Including VAT, this Whopper Wednesday, grab a friend and head down to your favorite BK Nassau location for a flame-grilled Whopper made your way with crisp fries for only $5.95. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Shopping is so rewarding with my Fidelity credit card. I get the best prices with price protection. Earn and redeem freedom points at my favorite stores. Get cash back. Plus, I booked a cruise. Get your Fidelity credit card today. Call 356-7764.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio, Howard Grant in your company, the foundation on this absolutely gorgeous August 21st, 2023. It's Monday. I'm not here. I'm not really here, but I'm here. And I needed to leave something fresh, something vibrant, something essential, something new, something tangible with you, even though I'm out there. My wife is probably dragging me somewhere and telling me what to do right now. So I'm here grateful with you guys and grateful to you for being able to tune into to today with us. I'm sitting in with none other than 54th Speaker of the House of Assembly. Hopefully you heard the top of the hour and the introduction to the conversation that we're having. None other than D. Howson Mutri, as we dive deeper into these conversations for national growth and development. Now, When we left off, you started to talk about the allegations, the corruption allegations, the immigration issues, BPL, ending a session. Now, I want to be able to be in full transparency. I don't purport to know all these things. I, like many of us, travel with the tradition of what our expectations can be based upon what we've seen before. Now, we know things continue to be able to shift in an evolving society. And whilst things may be taboo and indifferent, and we've never seen it before, a great deal of people will say, it's not illegal. Okay, we accept it. It's not illegal. But let's talk about this. This introduction to the proroguing of the House of Assembly, when we heard the AG take on a position, and I think Theo Seeley would have asked him from Eyewitness News whether or not they're going to be able to introduce anything new. What about the old bills? And he says, we're going to bring all those back. I was confused. I didn't understand. If you're not going to be able to bring any new legislation, if you don't have anything new to kind of bring in to bolster the confidence, social confidence that the PLP is understanding that we need to move in a particular direction, let's say based upon what's happening externally, then why do this? Then why take on this opportunity and approach to say that we're proroguing the House of Assembly? We're not really going to do anything much. We're going to bring back the legislation and deal with medicinal cannabis. He keeps calling it marijuana, but I'm sure that he means medicinal cannabis in that particular perspective. Now, I want to know from you, is this another tactic to, because if I'm being honest, I feel like there is subtle distraction. Simultaneously, these issues have existed in our country for a long time. Can I say that? Can we be absolutely honest? Both immigration and the allegations of corruption and even this amplified approach that we're seeing come to the forefront with rape or sexual assault. We have been grappling as a society with these things and never saw any administration take on a pronounced position on these particular things.
Well, you see,
talk to me about
it, Mr. Grant. When you take on a slogan that it is a new day,
my God,
you have to prove that you're not the same old way and you're not acting in the same old way. I think the PLP has gotten to the point now where there is a mounting sort of avalanche of the same old way that they are facing in terms of the allegations of corruption and all of the different activities and the apparent failure in administration to get certain things done, the potholes and so on. And so everybody's saying, you say it's a new day.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is the same old way.
Now, touch this, because I want to be balanced here. Wasn't the same sentiment projected to the Free National Movement for the People's Time?
Yes.
Talk to me.
Yes.
Okay.
Because if you say it is the People's Time, the people usually should reflect the majority.
Yes.
And the Free National Movement was labeled as a party that's looked after the benefit of the minority. That was one of the major challenges that I had in being a member of the Free National Movement,
mm-hmm.
that I did not want to be perceived as being a part of any organization that would sort of dismiss the marginalized or defer the treatment
mm-hmm.
In favor of the privilege
mm-hmm.
in society. And so you have to make certain when you are moving ahead politically. I think what the major trap has been over the years is that the two major parties in the Bahamas believe
mm-hmm.
that it's sufficient for them to point the finger at the failures of their successor in government.
Has that been as a result of not the society at large, not demanding change, not demanding productivity? I think we in a society, we often hear it. You heal someone, you say, hey, what's up, baby? I can't see you. Child is busy. But everyone neglects to talk about productivity because busy could just be like a chicken with no head. But productive is one of the things that escapes both political organizations for a very long time.
And the reason for that is in my estimation, both political parties are trapped into political tribalism, where they believe that when they come to power, only the supporters of that party should be contributing to the national development of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they give those persons preference whether they are deserving or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and both major parties would do this. It appears a little bit more apparent when the PLP is in power, because the PLP claim to fame is the support of the grassroots black belt.
Mm-hmm.
So what the PLP do becomes more apparent than what the Free National Movement might do, because the Free National Movement affiliation association has always been big business
for indirect interests
and oligarchs of mm-hmm. society.
Mm-hmm.
So their policies may be reflected differently
mm-hmm.
in terms of how they maneuver politically mm-hmm. to assist their supporters.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to get, if we want to see national development and increase in productivity, we have to recognize that with a small population of like less than 500,000,
mm-hmm.
we need to involve all of the brightest minds in our society as we seek to develop the nation.
Friday, the same thing. The exact same concept, idea, theological approach has been placed on the table by Ellsworth Johnson. And I sort of label it a utopian concept, a utopian society. Both you and Ellsworth Johnson have had an opportunity to be able to sit at the feet of leadership in the proximity of power, and you recognize that though you carry great convictions and this kind of a weight to be able to see us, the country, move in a particular direction, it doesn't necessarily happen like the way you desire within those political organizations. And for the most part, those organizations are so enshrined, entrapped, crystallized in their way of thinking that may not necessarily even be their constitution, just the rhythm of the traditions in those organizations. It's hard for change and growth to penetrate. Talk to me about it.
Yes, see, both political organizations are stratified in their structural makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So you would find that while you may claim to be a PLP or claim to be a FNM, if you are in the lower strata of the organization, you don't really know what is going on.
You ain't get biblical, but let's get bigger. You are not in the holies of holies.
No.
You're on the outside.
Yeah.
You're on the outer gate.
And so
when the you're in the inner court.
When the Sanhedrin Council right, and makes the determination, you will find that it is aristocracy.
Wow.
That is happening. In that, you know, the aristocrats under Aristotle's philosophy
mm-hmm.
believes that the commoners mm-hmm. should not be participants in the decision-making process. And the decision should be made by the elites, and they should be advised
mm-hmm.
and told
mm-hmm.
what the decisions are. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what happens within the structure of political parties.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered when we became the government that on occasions we would have activities even at the highest level of government, and many of the ministers didn't know what was happening.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause there is, there are the disciples, and then there's the inner council. And we know that Peter was always with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And for Peter, for me, based upon that, he was the only man who got a job in heaven,
yes,
on earth.
And so we have...
So you had to have proximity.
So the challenge that we are facing as a small nation is, for example, let me give you an example of what I see as a major problem in the country in terms of a philosophy. We just celebrated 50 years 50-year jubilee of independence. But we're still latching on to all of the systems of oppression and subjugation. We would not even repeal certain laws that have been put in place to oppress and subjugate the masses in favor of the master. All these laws that were passed before 1950, we still use them, especially in the banking system, to oppress and subjugate the mortgagor in favor of the mortgagee, the banks. So
you're blowing my mind. I can say some stuff. Go ahead.
And the prime minister, for example, shocked me really.
Former or current?
This current prime minister, he shocked me when he started talking about the celebrations of the 50th anniversary, and he started talking about inviting the king to participate in our 50th anniversary of independence. Well, we are supposed to be moving in the opposite direction, away from the crown and away from the king. That is why, while I love Mother Pratt, I don't celebrate the appointment of a new governor general, because to me, a new governor general signals the reinforcement of the crown, of the master, of the subjugator, of the oppressor. Why are we still, at this time in our history, needing to pledge allegiance to the crown, to the king or the queen? Why do we have to have the royal assent for a law to pass in the Bahamas? Why do we still have the Privy Council as the final court of appeal? When are we going to stand on our own 2 feet and our own legs and take on the responsibility of independence?
I want to ask you this. Before we go to a break, I know we soon got to go to a break. I want to ask you, when has there been a come to Jesus moment for you? Was it the tribulation that you endured or that you had to fight your way through in the House of Assembly when you allowed yourself, as Speaker of the House, to spill your convictions and positions on the table? Is it before that? Is it as a result of the turbulence that you had internally within the Free National Movement, or the exposure that you had to see that these men and women may not necessarily carry the character that they purport to have? When was it that you said, oh my God, this can't be what I expected it to be? Talk to me about it.
Well, you know, I'm scientifically trained. I was trained in meteorology initially.
Okay.
So I was trained in system analysis and design. And in the process of that training, I discovered that systems produce results, and that the industrialized world, or what we could call, quote unquote, the white world, understood that systems produce results. We learned about the solar system and the systems that produce the changes in the weather, how the Earth relates with the moon in its orbit, and so on, of the sun. Now, what is interesting is that once you discover that systems produce results, then you can get beyond the humanity in the system. Because no matter who is in power, if you adopt the same system, the system is going to produce the result. Not the personalities. That's why when the PLP was in power and they adopted these same system, even though they were supposed to be the great liberators, they produced the same results that the system was producing under the UBP. When the Free National Movement came to power, they produced the same results that the UBP and the PLP produced under those systems, because the systems are producing the results.
But what about those persons who say under the same system, 1992, we saw different results. 1997, we saw different results. Come 2017, we didn't see the same results. More specifically for the Free National Movement, come 2002, we didn't see the same results. More specifically for the PLP. So whilst we believe that the collective of the system could be able to perform or continue to move us in a particular direction, leadership, for the most part, whether we yield ourselves and give our autonomy over to it, leadership has caused there to be this perceived growth or this contraction.
Well, you mentioned a word earlier in the show. You talk about productivity.
Okay.
Right? The system of taxation that we have in place today in the Bahamas, right? Of consumption taxation that was handed down through all the colonies, whether you were British, French, Spanish, Portuguese, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
The system of consumption taxation is a system designed to kill productivity of the local people and to create and make them importers.
So you agree with neocolonialism?
Well, I wouldn't say it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that if you have a system that tells you that the way to generate your revenue is to tax the non-productivity of your people. In other words, if you want this brochure, you want a pen, you want a computer, you want a microphone and so on, your people can't produce it. But the government is generating its revenue based on the fact that your people cannot produce a car or cannot produce a computer. So we have to import it. The minute we import it, the government puts a duty on it.
This is eerily familiar.
And penalize its people because of its non-productivity, of their non-productivity.
Your leader, 2017 to 2021, indicated that this was a lazy form of being to identify and bring revenue for the people, for the country, for the coffers of the treasury. He said, that is lazy. And he started to introduce a new concept, innovation and creativity. He says, we're going to be innovative, we're going to be creative. And they did the exact same thing.
That's because he didn't understand that the system was producing the result. See, you could talk and say anything. You could go and put orange juice in a gasoline engine. But the car is not going to move because the system, the engine isn't designed to be ignited by that juice. It's designed to the pistons to be to ignite based on the fuel, the gasoline. See, so if you say that you want to remove yourself from this lazy way or this lazy system, then you have to get up off your backside and not be lazy. And you have to then introduce a new system. Mm. You see, you can't just put mechanisms in place within the existing system and expect the system to change. You have to come and change a new system. And you have to have the courage to do it. You cannot say that income tax, for example, is a system that cannot work and should not be introduced in the Bahamas when every industrialized nation, the nations that are producing in this earth, use income tax as the revenue-generating mechanism for the government. And why? Because the philosophy of an income tax system calls for the government to increase and to find ways to increase the income of its people and the productivity of its people so that the government revenue could increase.
For the most part, we have seen that on the campaign trail is always a desire to have these kind of conversations about what needs to happen and bringing the theory, right? So casting a dream, an idea. But after stepping over the threshold into leadership, we've seen every single party, every administration fall in line with this exact same system that you talk about. Let me take this quick commercial break, ladies and gentlemen, and be right back after this. Foundation. Foundation.
foundation.
Grab your camera, capture the spirit of the Bahamas, and win cash and prizes. Scotiabank, in partnership with the Guardian Media Group, invites all youth, amateur, and professional photographers to enter the Celebrate Bahamas 50 Photography Competition, being held under the theme One Nation, One Legacy, Our Future. With more than $8,000 in cash to be won, snap those photos and send them in by August 30th. Visit guardiantalkradio.com or bs.scotiabank.com to find out how to enter. Let's celebrate our proud nation in photos. Terms and conditions apply.
Guardian Radio and the Foundation are on the move.
Bahamas, this one's for you.
SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Every Thursday, the Foundation with Howard Grant will highlight small businesses throughout the country, far and wide. Your products, services, prices, and personality. We want to hear it all. Get your 30 or 60 second advertisement heard on air at a fraction of the cost. We here at the Foundation understand the times and don't want you to be left behind. With Guardian Radio, you reach your specific demographic and it is unmatched.
We reach thousands daily.
Get your products off the shelf and your services in their hearts. Small Business Thursdays with the Foundation, only on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. For more information, call 302-2300 or the Help Me Howard line at 827-0111. SBT. Small Business Thursdays. Get your business moving today.
You've tried everything. ASUS, with your mother's cousin's sister's auntie, and even hiding your money under your mattress. But is your money safe? Your Bahamian dollar deposit in a member bank or credit union is insured up to $50,000. If anything happens, your deposit up to the insured value will be returned to you thanks to Deposit Insurance. Visit Deposit Insurance Corporation at www.dic.bf.
Protection for your money guaranteed with DIC.
Baja sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin. Oh, Baja sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies, giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye hair, we'll take good care of you.
Come visit us at Baja Treat Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711. Or visit us online at www.baharetree.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant in your company, The Foundation, on this beautiful August 21st, Monday. We are live and in full effect, grateful to be in your company. I'm hoping that you tuned in for all this time that we're kind of chopping it down. I know you got questions. Send your questions, 827-0111, 827-0111. Don't text the 422 today. I'm not going to see that. 827-0111. I'm going to see it wherever I am in the world. We can be able to pick that up and kind of talk about it when we get back. We're going to have extended conversations and dive deeper into this. And if you're here for the top of the hour and the second portion of the conversation, we're talking with none other than D. Howson Moultrie, the 54th Speaker of the House of Assembly, being able to tell us about systems and the idea that a great deal cannot change unless the system change. And so for you, I want to be able to put to the table for you, like I asked, was there a come to Jesus moment after you amalgamated and joined this system, or after you recognized, after becoming a part of the system, that there was no chance for reformation and that leadership did not necessarily carry the spirit for growth and development, and you pull back? Talk to me about that.
Well, like I said, you know, having had that basic scientific training, it became apparent to me that certain systems have to change. And so the first recognition was that we didn't seem to appreciate in the parliament the separation of powers, mm-hmm. that the government was really made up of three branches, three co-equal branches. which was the first branch of the government, is the legislative branch. And the legislative branch has certain functions. It has a legislative function. It has a representative function. It's the only institution in the country where every single citizen has representation. And then it has an oversight function that is given to it by Article 72. Then there's the executive branch of the government, or the cabinet, which is the policy-making branch of the government, which is responsible and answerable to the legislative branch of the government based on Article 72 of the Constitution. And so I was, as the speaker, they wanted to box me in as if I was simply a referee of the debates.
Wasn't that the tradition? Has that not been the tradition for the 53 before you, for the most part?
Not necessarily, because Sir Ali Butler, who was also an attorney,
mm-hmm.
had a different perspective,
mm-hmm.
because he understood the concept of the separation of powers and the role of the various branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
The third branch of the government is the judiciary, the court system. And one of the principles of the separation of powers is that no one person should control more than one of the branches.
Mm-hmm.
So we shouldn't have a supreme leader, like a prime minister, who wants to control the legislative branch, right? And he wants to control the executive branch. And then he wants to appoint all the judges and control the judicial branch. That's where we are in the Bahamas today.
But isn't that the pursuit? Watch me. Let's chop it down like this. Isn't that the pursuit for power? It can't be the $28,000. It can't be the additional $60,000 that you get when you step into this cabinet position. That's not enough. These men are men of means. They come from a position where they could make good money for themselves and their families. They find themselves in this position pursuing power not for the money, but for just that, this idea and opportunity to be supreme overlord.
Foundation. The foundation.
It's Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM radio. Howard Grant and your company on this absolutely gorgeous Monday afternoon. So happy to be in your company. I hope you're having a good lunch out there, all those persons. I thank you, thank you, thank you so much for tuning in today. It's a beautiful day. I know you're itching, your finger itching, you're yelling at the radio, you have these kind of positions, your mouth dropping. You cannot believe that we're taking it there. My God, we're taking it there. It's time for us to be able to talk with conviction, with passion, this determination to see this country move forward, upward, onward, and together. I don't want to get mad spiritual and preachy with you, but what I can say to you is that in the year of our Jubilee, man, talk to me, there needs to be transformation for growth. There needs to be a very clear understanding that we're moving together towards a bigger, better Bahamaland. I'm happy to be in your company today, guys. If you want to be able to give me a text, please do so. 827-0111. 827-0111. I'm not going to read it today, but I can definitely get back to that. I want to be able to have that there, put a pin to that, and get back to that. Well, like I said today, if you're just tuning in, I don't know where you were. Make sure you listen to it, GuardianTalkRadio.com, GuardianTalkRadio.com, and pick it up a little later on. But I'm speaking with none other than D. Howson Mudry, the 54th Speaker of the House of Assembly, and he has put it all on the table. He's bared it all today, because even some of the things that are politically taboo and socially taboo, he's been able to touch those things. Our allegiance, where we left off, our allegiance that we played to world entities to ensure that we can always find ourselves nestled in the position of proverbial favor, or the expected or desired favor. And for the most part, being able to neglect the constitutional autonomy and the sovereignty of our Bahamian people. Howson, I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about your proximity and recognizing that this may not necessarily be for the growth and development of the Bahamian people. This is just another day at the park. Talk to me about it.
Well, you know, the first thing we have to recognize with this government is that this government is what I call a pandemic government. And I call them a pandemic government because the snap election was called in the middle of the pandemic, and 68,000 Bahamians decided to stay home and not vote. This government received 66,000 votes, which means that more people stayed at home and didn't vote than gave the government its mandate. So this government has been in campaign mode since it came to power. I have never seen as many parties and social events as by a government that I've seen since this government came to power. And this whole prorogation of the parliament, in my estimation, is another attempt at the glitz and the glamour and the pageantry. I'm certain that this proroguing of the parliament is being used as a political tool. Why? Because once they go back down to Bahama, they will have footage to play on the parliamentary channel for the next 2 years. See, don't forget now, every time you turn on that parliamentary channel, they will repeat of the opening of the parliament at Bahama. It was becoming nauseating. Every time you turn to the parliamentary channel, you would be seeing that repeat. Now, after they prorogue the parliament reconvenes in the new session, they're going to have all that footage. From October 4th, right into Thanksgiving, you would be fed with what we did from 2021.
Well, it's either that or roots. You got to make your mind. You want that or you want roots? Because they can play roots.
But this is what I'm saying. So what they would do is they will have all of their propaganda going on what they've done and what they intend to do with this new legislative agenda. And they would have the speech from the throne, and that would be repeated. By the time you get out of that, it will be Christmas.
D. Halsey Motri, I love you. I can say this because you swim into waters that most statesmen, they refrain from. A lot of persons, not because their inability to swim, but the fear that others have. Oh my God, you're swimming so far out that they try to stay within the shoreline. You are going out today.
Well,
so
listen, I did a teaching on Sunday in our church.
Mm-hmm, let me hear it.
And I talked about deception. And as the tool that we see happening today, where you don't know what is real from what is not real. And one of the statements that I made is, I ain't scared of no perverts and reprobates. And I send that message to any worker of the devil.
My God.
Or any reprobate. If you look at Titus chapter 1, verse 16, it mm-hmm. tells you what a reprobate is. Mm-hmm. A reprobate and a pervert is anyone who is prepared to go against that which is right. And that is what we're beginning to see globally today.
But that's what it is. I said to you as the introduction when we started before the break, in 1992, when they introduced, for that time, they introduced The Simpsons, it was strategically designed to be able to shave, just small pieces, some of our convictions and ideas and the traditions about what our family taught us. And though we may not necessarily be able to show it to our parents, it popped up when we had kids ourselves.
Exactly.
It popped up. So this is a conditioning. Now, so to talk about this sort of an idea that we're going against what is right, the question that we have is what is right? Because we have been taught that if it feels right, for the most part, it's right. And no one has this true north anymore to say that this is the course that we should travel. that this is the convictions that we should carry, that this is the foundation that builds strong men and women anymore. It's all about, a lot of persons that call me and say, Howard, your show is conservative. I'm telling you, people call me and say, Howard, your show is conservative. Howard, I can't believe that you think like this is such old-fashioned, archaic way of thinking. And I don't understand that because I know that convictions are unyielding and they're steadfast from one generation to another. And principles don't change. That's what it is.
Don't change.
That's just what it is.
But people get caught up. Don't forget now, we are also in the information age. Technology has made the exchange of information almost instant throughout the world. And so I tell people all the time, persons who are not able to read and write have audience on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So what is their foundation
mm-hmm.
in terms of being able to persuade?
But even us within our society, people. Watch me. I can tell you a short story and then I can pull back as quick as I possibly can. There are men and women who I know, not necessarily know of. I know these men and women, and I know these stories personally, that would have gone to Hubert Ingraham in 1997, relentlessly, during that particular time, all the way up till 2002, looking for an opportunity to represent their constituency. And Hubert Ingraham, being the stickler that he is to identify the caliber of individual and the sort of passion and intuitive nature, he's always been able to deduce who you are. Okay, let me tell you why. And so a lot of persons, and I ain't gonna call no names, people will go to him and say, Ingram, man, give me a chance. It's a family, I got money or this and that. He say, boy, you're good right there. You stay right there. Mm-hmm. And for a very long time, watch me, for a very long time, men and women within the Free National Movement, because these are the people that I know, they served in a capacity without any sort of grumbling. They served in their capacity because Hubert Ingraham identified them, what their capabilities are, and said, continue to be able to grow in this area. When there was a shifting, a changing of the proverbial guards, the guards of leadership within the organization, and the former Prime Minister Ingraham stepped back and allowed for Minister takeover, and Minis aired in the very first onset when he indicated that the Ingraham era is over. Now, he thought that era was E-R-R-O-R. But we knew as a collective that the Ingraham E-R-A is over. Because those persons who were the service within the organization became extremely buoyant. And not because they acquired the significant information to be able to propel the party. Their allegiance was this yes man attitude.
You see, the first major quality in my estimation of a leader is to recognize the influence of his predecessor.
But how can you say this now? But you weren't part of the organization.
No, but I never had the view that the Ingraham era was over.
Okay.
Because I always knew that a former prime minister must still have some degree of influence over the people that he led and that he was prime minister over. And the reason for that is you can see it even with Minis, for example. He would have helped and put some people in place
mm-hmm.
who would have a certain level of loyalty to him.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise is true for the former Prime Minister Ingraham,
mm-hmm.
who had three terms
mm-hmm.
in office,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't you think some people are grateful to him?
Well, they will forever be grateful
exactly.
to him.
Exactly.
Forever.
So for you to make a statement that the former Prime
he
Minister
automatically
who brought the Free National Movement to power for the first time in history,
yeah,
right? His era is over and he's still alive. And for you to go down in Abaco and after Hurricane Dorian and reject his volunteering to assist. See, certain, in my estimation, certain errors were made that brought an end to the Minis era.
E-R-R-O-R.
Yes.
Let's spell it properly.
Yeah.
Amen.
So I think that was a mistake. I think Menace even realized now that that was a mistake. But moving forward in terms of the country, we have to understand what is going on as a people, right? When was the last time you've heard the backbench mentioned in Parliament?
The backbench, there's no such thing.
It don't exist. Why?
You can't.
It doesn't exist. Why? Because the prime ministers over the time has appointed such a large cabinet that the backbench doesn't exist.
And see, beyond
this,
that,
this is a breach of the system where the prime minister is appointing such a large cabinet so that he can control the legislative branch of the government as well. See, if you come to the legislative branch with more votes than the opposition and backbench combined, you have nullified the purpose of the legislative branch.
Yes.
And that is what is happening. That is why the system is failing. That is why there is no accountability. That is why there is no transparency.
But there was a systematic approach. I keep going back to your system that you talk about.
Yes.
The systematic approach was to ensure any time the conversation about the increase in finances for members of parliament, any time that that's introduced, it's always rejected. $28,000.
But what the people need to understand is it's costing them more.
They ain't going to talk about this.
Much more to have a Gussie May or an enlarged cabinet. It's costing them more. Why? If you increase, for example, the members of parliament salary from $28,000 even to $60,000 or $70,000 for each member, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would be less than what the government, the taxpayers are paying now to have 23 and 25.
With 80.
With all of the additional benefits that accrue to a minister, all of the expenses that are covered by the minister, all of the vehicles, all of the extra staff, it is causing the country more. And the most fundamental cost that it is causing the country is the total... My former clerk don't like for me to use this word,
mm-hmm.
but it basically makes the legislative branch impotent.
Of course it's impotent.
You see?
Of course it's impotent.
Because
it's proverbially
the legislative
erectile
branch,
dysfunction. Can we say that?
Exactly.
Just be very clear.
Exactly.
Okay, let me say why. Let me say why. Now, I'm going to put it down in terms that everyone could understand. There has been social inflation on almost every sector. If you send your children to government school, if you send your children to private school, those fees have gone up. Rent has gone up. Everything has gone up all around us. Gas has gone up. We have to pay. And though these people perceive to be elevated socially, they still live here. They got to live. $28,000 can't do nothing for nobody. Systematically, strategically, leadership understands this. And there has not been any. The last time we saw agitation for this was Travis Robinson. Travis Robinson spoke to it and then pulled back quick. Okay, now watch me. If there is increase to, let's just be modest and say $60,000, then we could see the true level of leadership in this country.
And
true representation within those particular constituencies. Because members are afraid to speak because they amalgamate their lifestyle based upon the $28,000 that they're getting and the additional that they're getting for PowerSec or the additional that they're getting for these various areas. And as a result of that, their allegiance is no longer to their constituency. Their allegiance is to paying their bills that they have required to be able to live in this society.
And the psychological impediment that is brought about by the fact that the member of parliament who is elevated to a parliamentary secretary, or to a minister of state, or to a substantive ministerial post, he knows that that appointment can come with a disappointment by the person who appointed him.
The proverbial whip is always on.
Exactly.
Always on.
If you are a member of parliament and your salary is increased, only a decision by you can cause your resignation. In other words, if you go contrary,
because the preamble is you serve at the pleasure of the prime minister. Your immunity
at the cabinet
was
level.
The seat that you sat in, and you understanding your allegiance not to the prime minister, not to the cabinet, but to the constitution and to the people, to the house itself. And that would separate you, for the most part, in those particular instances. And while she's talking about Speaker Butler and the particular things that he's done, we've seen many speakers genuflect and be placed in this position to be just that, a referee, for the most part. And so I tell you, I really like this conviction, and I want to get back to this before I go to a break. I want to get back to this because you started off this hour here and talking about the pomp and pageantry associated with what we see coming out of the PLP and how this could possibly be as a result of another opportunity to be able to have, you know, us inundated with the successes of the PLP or the perception thereof, and they keep pushing that in our face. Has the PLP really changed its course? This is what they've been. Years ago, we know when it's time for us to be able to vote. I'm a person to tell you stories about how roots keep coming on and roots keep coming on, so forth and so on. Things didn't change. In 2002, the very first time that I was prepared to vote, going to FNM, because I need to choose for myself. Now, my family is FNM, but I get into PLP rallies also, right? And so I need to absorb the information. And men I knew that sat on my grandmother's settee in her couch in her house and spoke to her about what can happen. I went to the PLP rallies and I hear, y'all really want salt and pepper? Y'all ready for the denigrating, socially deteriorating and continuing to be able to speak, whether subtly or pronounced, to some level of segregation in our society? Has the PLP really changed? Has there been this reformation for growth and development?
Well, you know, the first thing, I think when you do any analysis of what is going on now for this first, basically 2 years now of this new government, is that it coming out of a pandemic and in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian, it is difficult not to appear to have done something. Mm-hmm. In other words, once the pandemic was lifted, automatically certain things what happened. Because during 2019 and 2020, when everything was being shut down, you know, businesses being shut down, people being terminated, people being furloughed, people being put in the unemployment line, the government assisting through national insurance and through all of these food programs and so on, the economy had a downturn, mm-hmm. right? Well, when you put an end to that, mm-hmm. naturally it would appear that something great has happened, but can we attribute that to you? When you say unemployment is down to single digit, can we attribute that to you, or can we attribute that to the fact that this is the aftermath of a pandemic?
This is heavy, what you're saying.
Economy is turning and increasing. Right?
This is heavy what you say, because the same question I have is that during the time of the lockdown, and we would have seen former Minister of National Security Marvin Dames with all of the arms of government within those particular departments speak to the fact that crime is down. Can we attribute it to you?
No. Well.
Or is that as a result of the lockdown?
No.
People in their house.
I'd say no. The policy of the lockdown caused an indirect reduction in the crime because the criminals
were inside, okay,
and more police were on the streets than had ever before. And because of the curfews and the lockdowns, police were positioned at almost every major junction.
Right.
Right. And so the criminals.
So the opposite had to happen when the country opened up. And everyone now scattering out, jobs have to get done, construction have to get done again, the hotels got to get run. So simultaneously, if we cannot contribute or attribute a reduction in crime to the Free National Movement and their position, then we cannot attribute growth and economic growth and development in our society to the PLP under this particular tenure. These things were inevitable when you open up the gates.
Exactly.
People can come in.
Now, you say unemployment is down, right? I have a friend who married a Canadian and just came back from Canada. He told me he has never seen that many. He went to the mall, and he thought he was still in the Bahamas. He was hailing so many Bahamians. So maybe unemployment is down because your Bahamian citizens are finding employment and permanent residency in Canada and other places.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at the entire picture.
So you're saying that there isn't
because there's a direct relationship between
mm-hmm.
crime and unemployment. There's not an inverse relationship between crime and unemployment.
You're getting heavy right now.
In other words, when crime increases, it's normally a sign that unemployment figures are going up. And when crime decreases, it's normally an indication that there's a turnaround in the economy and unemployment figures are going down.
But it didn't trend in that particular moment.
Now we have a circumstance where crime is going up. But unemployment is going down. That's what they call an inverse relationship. That is not a normal relationship between crime and unemployment. So then you have to look deeper and analyze deeper.
Well, statistically, they're indicating now that crime is going down, but sexual offenses is significantly on the rise.
Listen, I wouldn't trust no figures coming out of some of these government agencies.
Jesus. You need to stop it.
No, you need to stop it.
I don't understand how you could talk with these people like this. And you was a part of the thing.
I am a former person trained in statistics. And I can tell you, for example, unemployment statistics are taken normally in May. And the reason for that is the politicians want to take the statistics before June when 5,000 to 6,000 people leave school and join the unemployment line. So when they take the statistics...
Not before the mid-year budget review.
They do it in May, right? So when people leave school in June, they are not counted in that statistics.
You are something else. I'm
serious. You have to know and understand what's going on when you're being fed this stuff. Because if what they're saying is true, it should not be manifested in the society the way it is being manifested, if what they're saying is true.
Mm.
We should have situation in the Bahamas where, of course, as the population grow, you will be able to say we have more persons employed now than 5 years ago or 1 year ago or 2 years ago. Why? Because of the natural population growth. But does that mean that the situation in the country is better? Not necessarily so, because you might have more persons employed, you have more persons unemployed, you have more persons unemployable because of the failure of the public school system that is turning out almost 60% illiteracy. I don't know why we're calling that an educational system, right?
How's
it
use something else?
I'm serious. So you have reasons why the situation in the country appears to be getting worse. Why people don't feel safe. Why people feel that crime is up. No matter what the police statistics might say, people feel and the perception is that this place is not as safe as it used to be. That crime is on the increase,
mm-hmm.
and the criminals are becoming more reckless, where they would just drive up in the neighborhood and open fire no matter where the little children are present
at
or
a baby
not,
shower.
And that kind of stuff. See, the mentality has changed, where there is not that love and concern and respect even for their elders. There's a reason why that is happening. Now, people might say, oh, you old school, and you... talking about the utopian concept in terms of existence and so on. The world has changed now. We are more tolerant. We're more accepting. And all of that might be true. But my question always is, does that mean that it is better? yes, all those things might be true. All those things, all those changes might be happening. But is that better for us? Mm. Are we living in more more peaceful enjoyment of our lives? And I would say, I'd venture to say, no. Mm.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to dive deeper into if it's bitter or better. I'm sitting here with none other than D House and Mootree, being able to chomp this down. I want to take this quick commercial break and be right back after this.
At Marco's Pizza, we never skip on quality or ingredients. Save some cash and satisfy your cravings with our new carry-out medium two-topping pizza for only $12.50. That's right. Order two of your favorite toppings like sausage and green peppers on one medium pizza for only $12.50. Fat inclusive on our app or online. Made daily with fresh dough, our signature sauce, and fresh cheese. Only at Marco's Pizza. Restrictions apply.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
Shavara Roka-Enias, Chikchani Farms. I don't think I chose farming. I think farming chose me. Winning this award will definitely give us the funding that we need to start our farming season. Most persons who are in the agriculture field realize that at the start of the season, which is in the next couple of weeks, you do always need a bulk of cash. I think we have a great track record for the work that we've been doing in agriculture over the last 10 years. And so when I saw the opportunity for an award like this, I figured, you know what, I should just go ahead and enter.
The Agrarian Awards, September 16th.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Foundation. The foundation. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, 96.9 FM Radio, Howard Grant and your company. The foundation on this beautiful Monday afternoon. So happy to be in your company. I'm grateful that you're here. And I know that you have a tremendous amount of questions. I know that you have a strong position on a great deal of things that Howson's saying with conviction. And being able to trouble the waters of the traditional foundation of Christianity in our country. I know we ain't say that so far, but a lot of these things find its roots within Scripture. And I always enjoy having these kind of conversations. So I want to kind of chop it down today. If you want to send us any information, if you want to be a part of the conversation as we go forward, please, 827-0111, 827-0111. Howson, you know, you speak of these things, and I grapple with it. I grapple with where we are and my fear of where we're going. And I try to figure out within myself, what strength, what power, what position, what do I have in my hand, Moses, in terms of being able to lend to our society and do my part for there to be change? And for the most part, I see I have a microphone. And so I try to do the best I possibly can to encourage, to inspire, to motivate, to really be able to let persons see that there are no opportunity beyond this. I thought about it before, about whether or not I get involved in politics. And I get spanked so much at the front door, I say, I don't think this is for me, right? I'm just trying to get into the front door, and I get spanked so much that, you know, a lot of people tell me things like, Howard, don't be dismayed. You still have a lot to offer. But I feel as though that I'm here and I'm doing my part. Now, you know, if time permits, if the Father calls me to do this, of course I'll serve, no problem. But I want to say this to you. Given the fact that you've already had an opportunity to serve, in a prestigious capacity and being able to wield a great deal of power in this country, so much so that you were able to persuade by force, right? a prime minister to make a decision that even went contrary to his benefit and his position. I know a great deal of persons out there are saying, man, why the prime minister call an early election? He cut down on my money. He cut down on this. He cut down on the contract, cut down on all these particular things. But a lot of persons actually say that they attribute that to your convictions, your commitment, and your pressing in these areas. Now that you're out, will you return?
Well, I think I am finished with elected politics. But as a patriotic Bahamian, I still have interest and commitment to seeing the Bahamas being transformed, hopefully within my lifetime. And so I believe that I will continue to make a contribution in any which way I can. Now, I happen to have been a member of Parliament for the Nassau Village constituency, for which I was not paid one red cent. I was the only member of Parliament in the last term or of Parliament that was not paid his member of Parliament salary. I didn't make an issue of it. I intend to challenge the constitutionality of that situation because I know that it's unconstitutional. But I didn't go into the politics for the money. I went into politics because I believe I had a contribution to make and a change. And my late pastor and mentor, Dr. Miles Monroe, always said to me, you know, Moultrie, be an original. And I say that to you, Howard Grant. Be an original and it will pave the way for your future. Men will pick you and put you in position and wonder why. And I think that's what happened to me in the Free National Movement. I used to be out there
personally. You and Michael Pine, didn't you?
Right? And people believe that I resign from the Free National Movement because I had a problem with the party or I had a problem with the prime minister. And they seem not to be able to grasp the concept that the Speaker of the House of Assembly should be an independent member of Parliament. And I wanted to establish going forward that whether the decision I made was accepted or not, that the Speaker of the House of Assembly should be a member that is independent. And the reason for that is if you look at parliaments all over the globe in the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, that is the trend where when a member is elected from a major party, he resigns from that party and serves the speaker as an independent member. And the reason for that is you will not only appear to be independent. See, when you are a member of the political party, for example, as this speaker is, a member of the Progressive Liberal Party, it is extremely difficult for her to go against the caucus of her party with respect to any agenda of the opposition party. It's almost impossible for her to be neutral or appear to be neutral. And so she cannot effectively appear to be serving as an unbiased speaker of the House of Assembly. And so the decision was to establish the beginning, hopefully that seed would have been sown so that we move forward. But as we move forward, there would be not only the autonomy of the parliament, and we saw where, despite all the criticism of my actions, this new prime minister decided that, look, we're going to pass the Parliamentary Services Bill that was not necessarily the one that I drafted, even though it is very similar, that was passed on to the former prime minister minutes from 2019. And he refused to move on it, whether it was by his choice or by advice he received.
Do you consider yourself a political martyr where, as you state, there are, within the parliamentary caucus, throughout the Commonwealth of Nations, people are trending towards the Speaker having the autonomy within the House of Assembly. Though there may be a stiff-neck approach locally, do you see yourself as a martyr? And do you expect there to be reformation, transformation, evolution within our House of Assembly over the course of our next 50 years as a result of your actions?
I see it. If this government is serious with the passing of the Parliamentary Services Act, mm-hmm. which is now an act mm-hmm. of Parliament, and implement that act mm-hmm. and establish the Parliamentary Commission, mm-hmm. then the Parliament will have its own budget, mm-hmm. which means that the Parliament don't have to be run into the Cabinet Office, which is a part, which is the executive branch of the government, to get anything done. Mm-hmm. The Parliament would also be able to raise its own revenue and receive grants from other parts of the world towards...
But isn't that the fair? The fair is autonomy leads to individuality, leads to critical thinking, and if you have that kind of a space, place, and position, that you do that kind of introspection, maybe you start to ask yourself questions, well, why do we have this guy as a leader? Well, why do we have this person here? So if they keep you dependent, if they keep you pregnant and bare feet, proverbially, that's what we say, mm-hmm. there's a relentless dependence on where you get your sustenance from.
Yes, but would that lead to good governance? You see?
Is there really a concern for good governance?
The objective should be, if we adopt a system, the objective of that system is to create checks and balances so that it creates good governance, it creates accountability, it creates transparency. How long do we have to exist as a nation where we parade our members of parliament before the courts on criminal charges? I told members of the Free National Movement when that process was initiated by the former prime minister, that there was going to be retribution.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
But now, what does that do to the institution? That lowers the institution to the point where people perceive the members of parliament are as a band almost of criminals.
Yeah, but this is Alibaba.
Alibaba and the 40 thieves type of concept, right? But you don't really want that to be the level of the highest institution in your country. You want the checks and balances.
Politicians has never shown us, for the most part, especially the back and forth and relationship that we see off the record with former Prime Minister Perry Christie and Hubert Ingram, in comparison to their professional status and position within the House of Assembly as politicians. We've never seen this level of transparency that seeks anyone to be able to lead the country with conviction, with passion, and ensure that there is integrity being upheld in us. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen that. There is a relentless desire.
But that doesn't mean we should accept.
No. It's even accepting. But there has been a relentless desire steeped into the fabric of the minds of politicians in terms of just being able to accept this by diffusion in the atmosphere, that they blame the outgoing party, the former administration, for the inaction, the lack of growth, whatever stagnation that they see there, they blame it. Well, you did it when you were there. And socially, it's become acceptable. I don't know why the FNM making noise about this. They didn't do it when they were there. I don't know why the PLP making noise about this. They didn't do it when they were there. And rejecting productivity, rejecting conviction, rejecting growth and development, and maintaining the line of existence. That's all we see as politicians right now.
But our history has been good in that we have not reached the level of revolution. But when you look at the mindset and the change in the mindset, particularly of young people today, we are moving towards revolution. Because the mindset is not to just sit back and accept and tolerate what was done in the past, particularly if you're saying it's a new day. You see, so what is happening now?
Well, this is going to be a new day. With the proroguing of the House of Assembly, they have to reset the new day, so this is going to be a new day.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to suggest that this period is. You know, if they're backing away from the new day. But I believe what really is beginning to happen, very subtly, say what you like about social media. Social media is a source of information. You may have to sift through and determine what you should accept and reject. But it is not controlled, even though some of the major carriers like YouTube and Facebook and so on try to
censor
speech, freedom of speech, if it isn't consistent with their agenda or what they're promoting, right? But locally, on the local level, they have not focused on censoring exchanges within the Bahamas as it relates to certain politics and social events and activities. And so people now are beginning to be able to access information.
So the revolution, in your estimation, will start with
in
the realm of media and technology.
In the realm of media and technology, which would bring about knowledge, information,
but
and wisdom.
Without speaking specifically, there are persons who are using platforms such as Facebook, YouTube, WhatsApp, to be able to spread misinformation.
Yes.
Because it's propaganda.
That's why I say you have to sift through.
But how you know if you ain't got no sense? When I say you ain't got no sense, I mean that you've never been exposed to a very clear understanding of these things. And a lot of people have detached themselves from that internal gut feeling that says, my spirit don't take to this, man. People just accept anything.
Right.
How you know?
Part of the initiative when I was in Parliament that I was trying to put in place as the Speaker was the development of the Parliamentary Channel as a platform for information with respect to how the Parliament, the Westminster model, should function, and the open Parliament concept where persons can come directly to their representatives.
That's an open-door policy.
And vent and also bring to the public their grievances in an open Parliament concept. That would force the hands of the executive branch of the government to put policies in place.
To actually work.
To actually function in the best interest of the people, as opposed to in the best interest of their little small cliques and their little small groupings, or stratified, what I call stratified groupings. And so I believe that the seeds have been sown. I believe that once you sow those seeds, no one can stop them from growing and from manifesting into the future. And we are beginning to see the transformation now. People should be able to openly criticize their members of parliament, their cabinet ministers, the prime minister, and even the judges. Because when you develop a corrupt system, the entire systems become corrupt. Because if you are saying that
it's a trickle effect,
the politician is corrupt, if you accept that, and I believe we accept that in the Bahamas for the most part, that they are corrupt.
The idea
well,
of it,
they
yeah.
are appointing the persons who sit on the bench. So the corruption will naturally
perceived, alleged corruption.
A flow. Well, in other words, if if I am a wrongdoer, I would want to put peace persons in place to protect me in the future in case I don't have this political power.
Yeah.
So I put persons in place who, when they have to make decisions, they protect me. Mm-hmm. That was a recognition by Fred Baptiste, who wrote the book, The Law, that once you put corruption and plunder, systems of corruption and plunder in place, you have to also put the system in place to protect the corruptors and the plunderers.
You know what that is? Grammy says that a liar is a thief, and a thief is a murderer. You need to ensure that every system protects the lie.
Exactly.
And if that means stealing to ensure that we safeguard the lie and keep it protected and isolated, we'll do that. If that means murder and eradication to protect the lie and the thieving that we've just done, we'll do that. So there is a progressive approach if there's no transparency.
Right. We should not have a situation. Our system should not degenerate to the point, for example, where persons who come before the court could possibly believe that they're not getting justice. Mm. They're getting politics.
There's a fear. There is a fear that exists in our society that says, I won't get justice. There is a fear that exists in society that says, this is where we're going to be. There's a fear. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of persons will sort of naturally move and gravitate towards vigilante justice, quietly being able to seek their own justice unto themselves. Or we've become amalgamated and accepting the idea of what our forefathers, our grandmothers would have said one time ago. Baby, just let that go. And so the strength that we have, where a lot of politicians like to talk after every devastation, they come out and say, the Bahamian people are resilient. The resilient, I always equate that resilience to just showing up. Like the cockroaches.
I have a question.
Let me hear it.
Why is it necessary for every incoming prime minister to find their own commissioner of police?
I got my ideas about that. I do.
See, that's a pregnant question.
I do have my ideas about that.
I could give all sorts of deliveries, but that is the fundamental question. If we have a system of justice and law enforcement that we are convinced and we believe is just.
But is there any autonomy in subsectors of government? Or is there a relentless allegiance to the prime minister of the day?
That is the failing of the system. This is what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah, because
that if the prime minister, if it is necessary for the prime minister to find a commissioner of police who is sympathetic to his party, and it is necessary for the prime minister to find and appoint judges to the bench that are affiliated with and sympathetic to his party, and I'm saying this across the board, not necessarily for this government, for any government. If that becomes the measure in terms of appointments, we are in trouble.
Well, I want to talk with you about reform. I want to talk with you about, I think we can go on for days about the ills that exist in our society. I want to talk to you about reformation, about growth, about expansion, about opportunities that expand beyond this position, and how do we right-size our society to get to this particular position. I want to talk to you like that. And I want to talk to you about how can we move forward from this particular juncture. Now, before I go to a commercial break, I will put this before you. We have seen this New Day administration come in, and this administration is doing everything that they possibly can, in my view. Okay, a lot of people tell me, Howard, stop talking foolishness. They're saying this is not going to happen. They're only doing this and introducing this. In my view and estimation, there is a great deal going on behind the steel cloak, the drapes, that says we have to get our party in order to be able to present ourselves unified to this particular objective. I've often said that the PLP is doing a great this Prime Minister, Philip Brave Davis, is doing a great deal as Prime Minister, being able to speak with eloquence and inspiration when he goes before CARICOM, or when he goes before the PAC committee, or when he goes before the UN. But when he comes local and being able to speak to the House of Assembly, I don't necessarily connect with the doctor that he's saying. So I say that to say, is there an alignment? Is there a desire to be able to not only reset, but not to move towards a by-election?
Well, you're talking about after the parliament, when the parliament comes, returns on October 4th.
Before the parliament returns on October 4th, I want to be able to lead with this. Before the parliament returns on October 4th, we're going to see a tremendous amount of days before then. We're going through the entire September. That's 30 days. Mm-hmm. I think we have maybe about, if I'm correct, I said 60 earlier, a shave under 60 before we get to October 4th. Why so much time? What are you going to do in that time?
Well, effectively, with the House being in recess and prorogued, the member of parliament in question that may be forced to resign his seat to cause a by-election will be taken out of the picture completely because parliament will not be meeting. So that issue is also very unlikely to be brought before the courts within that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that it is before the court now puts it in a position where it is not a subject that you can publicly discuss in terms of the merits of the case. And so there has, in effect, been a chilling effect placed on that particular issue by proroguing the parliament.
Mm.
You see? And that member is presumed innocent until proven guilty. And so you cannot demand, this is another thing that we have to understand, under the rules of parliament.
But where's the honorability in this matter?
No, but see, the honor doesn't come into place at this time. If the parliament was functioning properly, both the member for North Abaco and the member for Long Island would have been dealt with.
And the member for Carmichael?
And Carmichael would have been dealt with by the parliament itself.
Foundation.